is Thursday, August 13th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, massive explosions kill at least 44 people in a Chinese port city. U.S. World War II veterans return flags to Japan.
The flag is basically about 2.5 feet long and maybe a foot and a half wide like this. Has a red rising sun in the middle of it, and then has all this Japanese writing all around it and everything else.
And the country music group Little Big Town prepares to go on tour. It's all ahead. At least 44 people were killed and hundreds more injured by a series of enormous explosions at a hazardous materials warehouse in the northeastern Chinese port city of Tianjin late Wednesday. Pictures and videos show gigantic plumes of fire and a mushroom cloud that dwarfed nearby high-rise buildings and sent a massive shockwave that rattled residents several kilometers from the blast site. Aerial footage posted Thursday by the official Xinhua News Agency showed a still-smoldering center of destruction that stretched for multiple blocks, leaving behind hollowed-out buildings and charred vehicles. I spoke with VOA Beijing correspondent Bill Ide. Bill, I'm assuming that you were actually able to get over to this, or at least as near as you could, to the site itself?
Yeah, we tried to get as close as we could. We got up to about a kilometer away from where the blast site was, where you could see very clearly the smoke continuing to billow out from where the explosions occurred. And the police have tightly cordoned off a lot of the entryways, so it was a little bit tricky, but we managed to get by and find an area where you could kind of get a perspective on things.
And what does it look like around near that blast area?
The area where we were able to visit today really gave you a sense of just how massive this explosion was. We were in an area that was roughly 2 to 1 kilometer away from where the blast occurred, and we saw rows of apartment buildings with their windows blown completely out. In many cases, almost all of the windows were blown out. You could see into living rooms. There was a huge exhibition hall that we drove by and then stopped and took a look at, and we found there a couple of cars. One had its hood completely crushed in, and there was a rock or some sort of debris that had crushed it. And then not far away was a car that had been torched. Around there was no other signs of fire, but this car was torched, and behind it was a huge black charred piece of something that appears to have been launched and flown, you know, almost 2 kilometers to where we were and saw that.
Is it known at this point what caused the explosion?
At this point, it's still unclear what caused the explosion. The only thing that we've heard is that there are hazardous materials there, and there's been quite a concern among residents here about what is actually in the smoke. You can smell the smoke, and many people are wearing face masks on the street. But at this point, we don't know for sure what caused the blast. The Chinese government has, like it typically does, has put a lot of emphasis so far on the rescue effort, on those who are still firefighters and others who are missing, and trying to help families get reunited with their loved ones or find out what happened to them. So that has been the focus up to this point.
Have you been able to speak to any of the witnesses of the explosion?
We were able to speak with quite a few. We found a migrant worker who last night, like many people, felt it was an earthquake and quickly rushed out of his home. He was on the street, actually, when we met him, sitting down with his desktop computer next to him. He had managed to take that with him, and he talked about how things are very uncertain for him right now. He's waiting to see, you know, what his boss's employer says about what happens next, but, you know, expressed that he probably will have to go back to his hometown. So it seems like there are many migrant workers who are employed in this area where the explosion occurred, and this could have a huge impact on them. There are also residents who have had to flee their homes, and what they're going to do, given that their apartments have been damaged severely, and it's going to take time to fix them is unclear. We also ran into a truck driver who, interestingly enough, was driving a car. It was his car, and the front windshield was almost completely smashed. It looked like something had flown and landed on top of it, and he was trying to drive that away from the area. He says that he was about a kilometer away. His workplace is about a kilometer away from where the blast occurred, and talked about how it was in a complete daze, running around trying to figure out where to go for many hours. And you could see by his demeanor, and also he was shirtless and flip flops, that he had a terrible night.
What has the news coverage of this been like? And have you or other reporters from outside, foreign reporters, run into any restrictions, say, imposed by the government on any of this?
Well, like many news incidents in China, you have to be very careful. And with the police presence very heavy near the site, we kind of had to carefully work our way around the cordon and try to find an area where we could get closer. There have been reports about other news organizations having problems, especially at the hospitals where they're grieving families who are obviously, very distraught and lashing out at them. But as far as reporters being held or detained, as happens in incidents like this at times, I haven't heard about that.
Thank you very much, Bill, for speaking with me today.
You're welcome.
That's VOA Beijing correspondent Bill Ide. Well, joining me here in the studio is Susan Yockey, who's been looking at social media trends. So, Susan, what's the reaction to this terrible story in China?
Hi, Sarah. Well, Twitter is seeing an enormous response to the blasts in China. More than 160,000 tweets in the past day have included either Tianjin or hashtag Tianjin, according to the Twitter analytics site's Topsy. Hashtag Tianjin Blast is also popular. It's been used almost 4,000 times, and these numbers are still growing. Some of the most up-to-date information is being shared by the official Chinese press agency, Xinhua News, using the Twitter handle @XHNews. The agency tweeted earlier today that high levels of toxic chemicals are being detected 500 millimeters from the blast location. The tweet says, rescuers detected high levels of SO2, CO, NOx pollutants about 500 millimeters away from the deadly chemical blast spot. Those are the chemical symbols for sulfur dioxide, carbon monoxide, and nitrous oxides, all of which are considered toxic by the CDC. A lot of people are tweeting their disbelief and expressing sympathies for people dealing with the blast. It's worth noting that the Chinese government blocks Twitter in China. People use the social media site Weibo, so the vast majority of these tweets would have come from outside the country. But people across Weibo are sharing photos of the aftermath, and those photos are making their way onto Twitter. Elliot Higgins, a journalist who founded the site Bellingcat, has been tweeting out sets of photos he says are taken from Weibo that show damage to homes and businesses. We're seeing more and more amateur photos and videos in the aftermath making the rounds on social media. Sarah, we just want to take a moment to thank Olin Akishoglu for preparing this information for us today. Thank you, Sarah.
Well, thank you, Susan. That's VOA's Susan Yockey, and this is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
Russian microbiologists have found that a new strain of yeast was quite effective in treating wastewater that contains certain toxic chemical compounds. Conducting their research at peat bogs in western Siberia, the scientists from Kazan Federal University found that this new yeast strain was effective in eliminated nitro compounds. These organic compounds are commonly used in such products as explosives, insecticides, polymers, dyes, and some medications. The scientists focused on a waste product called trinitrotoluene, which is known to be a serious health threat. High numbers of this nitro compound waste are produced by industries such as oil refineries and military equipment manufacturers. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, the country music group Little Big Town prepares to go on tour. People in Japan and around the world lit peace lanterns this past week to mark the 70th anniversary of the dropping of atomic bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. More ceremonies lie ahead to mark the Japanese surrender. Six U.S. World War II veterans flew to Tokyo this month carrying 70 captured flags to return for the 70th anniversary of the end of the war. Correspondent Tom Bansi reports on a personal journey to promote healing and reconciliation.
It's been nearly 70 years since Dallas Britt last set foot in Japan. Back then, he was a battle-hardened infantryman in the U.S. Army's occupation force. Britt did manage to learn a few words of Japanese and a children's song.
It goes like this. Ami ami hoodie hoodie kasonga.
Now, all these years later, the 89-year-old just retired chiropractor from Auburn, Washington, found himself back in Japan on a new mission to resolve some old business. It has to do with this. During the war in the Pacific, many soldiers collected mementos from the battlefield, especially flags.
The flag is basically about 2.5 feet long and maybe a foot and a half wide like this. Has a red rising sun in the middle of it, and then it has all this Japanese writing all around it and everything else.
Britt's war prize was so common, it has an English name, a good luck flag. It was a personal item, a traditional send-off gift from family or co-workers to a Japanese soldier or sailor.
This flag was taken off of a dead soldier just to happen to be a souvenir that they picked up now.
Britt says he took the flag during a battle in 1945 that ousted the Japanese from the small island of Ieshima near Okinawa. He says he didn't understand until this summer the significance the flag might hold to the fallen soldier's family.
It's like taking, if you found a dead GI and taking his dog tags off him and being able to send it back to his parents, since the only connection they would have with it, because you wouldn't know where he was buried or nothing else. And that, what a wonderful thing to be able to return it to these people and be able to get it back to their relatives.
Britt was joined on the repatriation mission by five other World War II combat veterans. Ed Johan of Lincoln City, Oregon, survived the 1941 surprise Japanese attack on the U.S. base in Hawaii. He says the group traveled in the spirit of reconciliation.
I have no animosity towards any of those people. We all, their military and our military were just following orders, and we had no say-so of what our feelings didn't matter.
A relatively new humanitarian nonprofit conceived this mission and gathered the 70 flags from aging veterans or their children around the U.S. A Japanese-American couple, Rex and Keiko Zeke, co-founded the group, Obon 2015. Rex Zeke says they could have just mailed the flags to a Japanese ministry, but concluded hand delivery by former combatants would send a more powerful message.
We thought, when in history has there ever been a time when soldiers who were fighting against an enemy return 70 years later with items that were taken from the battlefield as souvenirs showing I captured and dominated this enemy, and now they are being returned with the sentiment of here, we hope this brings closure.
None other than the Prime Minister of Japan, Shinzo Abe, personally accepted the returned flags at a carefully choreographed ceremony in his office. The phalanx of photographers snapped away and filmed as the Zeeks and two of the aging veterans delivered the war souvenirs in white boxes. One silk flag was left unpacked. It was the one Dallas Britt plucked from the battlefield so long ago. Prime Minister Abe and Rex Zeke both spoke about finding peace, friendship, and closure. The photographers were ushered out. Then Mr. Abe unfurled Britt's flag and closely examined the messages and names written on it. Those inscriptions will provide clues to track down relatives or descendants of the fallen soldier. Mr. Abe noticed the soldier's son and daughter wrote on the good luck flag. Their father never returned from battle. 7 decades later, a trace of him could arrive home out of the blue. For VOA News, I'm Tom Bonsi.
And this is VOA.
Hashtag VOA. It's a weekly show, Tuesdays at 1730 UTC, where we bring you the top topics of the week. But the show lives on social media every day with your daily video shorts, What's Trending Wednesday, and the Friday Fast Five. Subscribe to the show at YouTube. You can find us at hashtag VOA. You can reach me at Twitter, at Perry Cal, or talk to the show anytime. Please don't forget to like us on Facebook. We like to be liked. We love to be seen. And you can reach us anytime.
Hi, my name's Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings, your request and dedication program here at the Voice of America. 1500 Universal, Monday through Friday, we're there for an hour playing your favorite music. You can send an email in and request your favorite songs by your favorite artist. You can also phone in as well. We have great contests and surprise guests from time to time. Border Crossings, every single day during the week at 1500 Universal, here on the Voice of America.
This is International Edition. Fans of Little Big Town got some good news when it was announced that the group plans to resume touring. One of the group members had to undergo vocal surgery recently. International Edition's David Byrd spoke with Country Hits USA host Nikki Strong about that and other news.
Good news for fans of the country vocal group Little Big Town. Jimmy Westbrook is back at full strength. Jimmy had been sidelined with some vocal trouble. Nikki, this guy was one of the lead singers, and he had to stop singing because he had some vocal problems, right?
Yep, just like so many artists are having problems, he was one of them. They figured, oh, you know, don't sing as much on tour. Just give your voice a rest. He went to the doctor. The doctor said, you need to have surgery now, otherwise you're not going to be able to do this.
And they had to cancel several concert dates. Millions of dollars.
Yes. Poof. And not only, they had to push back their tour to July, a July date, and then they had to push it back further because he wasn't totally healed. But the good news is he is healed now. He's been on Facebook talking, so it's great news. And of course, the title of the tour is Painkiller, which I think is hilarious and ironic.
Yeah, well, the funny thing is, too, he went on Facebook and he was saying it okay,
yes.
I'm a little better now.
messing with folks.
It's kind of strange. Talking kind of like Mickey Mouse.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's
okay.
A joke.
I got a girl crush. Hate to admit it, but I got a heart rush. It's slowing down.
In other news from the country music world, Jenna Kramer is pregnant.
Yes.
Now, Jenna Kramer, for fans who don't know, I mean, you know her from her music, but you will remember a little while back, we talked about her and Brantley Gilbert.
Yes.
Were an item.
They were an item.
And then Brantley went back to Amber, his long-lost love.
Yes.
Who divorced her husband.
Yes.
Does this
to
sound
be with
like
Brantley.
This sounds like we should be pouring alcoholic beverages.
Yes.
But to be with Brantley. And they got married. Now they're all happy ever after.
Mm-hmm.
And now Jenna Kramer, who is married to a football player.
Yes.
A big dude.
Yes.
So Mike is his name.
Yes.
She and he just announced that they are about to have a baby.
Yes. They recently got married. The baby is due early 2016. First time parents for the both of them. They were married in May after being engaged for 6 months. They met on social media, on Twitter, in fact. He favorited some of her tweets. And she said, who is this guy? She did some research on him. They met, and bam!
Oh, my goodness. See?
She got the boy and the man.
See? Well, see, that's her song. That's her song,
yes,
I Got the Boy,
exactly.
Which is about Brantley Gilbert, is it not?
No, I don't think so.
There were rumors that maybe that was about Brantley because, you know, when he was young and immature and
yes,
hadn't worked out all his stuff,
mm-hmm,
he was with her.
Yes.
And now Amber, now
yes,
that he's grown, now Amber gets the man.
Yes, it's possible. I could see the connection.
Oh, country music dish. Well, you know, speaking of connection, you can connect with Nikki. She is at VOA underscore music. You can also listen to her show, which is Country Hits USA. You can find that on our website, www.voanews.com.
Country music is very popular here in the U.S. as well as around the world. Well, that's our show. Please remember to visit our website at voanews.com. We have a range of stories on many subjects that might interest you, so please check it out. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks very much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In China's Zhejiang province, authorities are carrying out a campaign to remove crosses from thousands of church roofs, spires, and archways. Under the purported justification of building code violations, more than 1,000 crosses have reportedly been toppled or stripped away over the past year and a half. In addition, since 2014, more than 400 churches have reportedly faced partial or total demolition by the government, claiming the buildings were illegal structures. The U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom, an independent bipartisan federal commission, noted that many Christian believers in Zhejiang regard the campaign to remove the crosses and raise churches as directly targeting their religion. And they have not been silent about it. In July, Chinese Catholic officials described the dismantling of crosses on churches as an evil act. Christians took to the streets in protest in the southeastern city of Guangzhou. The Associated Press reported that in a rare move, China's semi-official Christian associations, which are supposed to ensure the ruling Communist Party's control over Protestant and Catholic groups, denounced the campaign against the crosses, claiming it risks alienating Christians from the government. Christians are not the only religious group targeted by officials in China. In its report, the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom noted that in the past year, there have been unprecedented violations against Uyghur Muslims, Tibetan Buddhists, and Falun Gong practitioners, in addition to Christians. Since 1999, the U.S. Secretary of State has designated China as a country of particular concern for severe violations of religious freedom. In its most recently published report, the State Department said that despite a constitutional guarantee that Chinese citizens enjoy freedom of religious belief, the government harassed, assaulted, detained, arrested, or sentenced to prison a number of religious adherents for activities reported to be related to their religious beliefs and practices. Secretary of State John Kerry has called freedom of religion a universal value ingrained in every human heart. He also pointed out that when countries undermine or attack religious freedom, they not only unjustly threaten those whom they target, they also threaten their country's own stability. The United States continues to call on all countries, including China, to live up to their international human rights commitments regarding religious freedom and allow their citizens the full exercise of this fundamental right and moral imperative.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.